It feels like now we can begin to establish some stability again, I hope. Instead of waking up every morning feeling dread, which I was doing for quite some time, nowadays I'm waking up feeling more encouraged. And aren't we grateful for the work of those brilliant scientists? Vaccines will be available soon to dial down the horror of this pandemic. And still, millions of people have been affected, will be infected, and we know will die. And our healthcare system and workers will continue to be pushed beyond their limits. The grief and losses are immeasurable. So many people's lives are being totally upended, losing jobs, their homes, and financial security. So many are hungry, terrified, desperate, and feeling cut off from each other. And along with this, we're living the tragic reality of systemic racism, witnessing over and over again Black people being murdered by police and white supremacists. And gender inequality continues as huge numbers of women are leaving the workforce to bear the brunt of childcare and home responsibilities, while still not having secure reproductive rights or equal pay. And along with this, reports of domestic violence and poverty are skyrocketing. The sense of feeling safe being out in the world, walking in the neighborhood, going to the store, hanging out with friends and family, it's all gone right now. Fear of the other has really ramped up. In any moment, one sense of safety can be jeopardized. People not wearing masks or walking by too close. Or as I recently witnessed in my neighborhood, an elderly Black man walking hand in hand with his young granddaughter, getting slammed with a nasty racial slur from a white man driving by in his car. And our public institutions that I've long thought would be humanitarian safety nets aimed to help and protect us are disintegrating before our eyes. All this chaos, fear, and grief has got to be having a huge effect not only on our own psyches, but also our collective consciousness. So how are you doing with all of this? If you're anything like me, I find it all so heartbreaking. I believe in and hope for a sane, kind, compassionate world. I believe in equality, justice, and the truth. I believe everyone deserves respect and equal opportunity. But the world we're living in seems to be falling apart and moving in the opposite direction. And these outer disturbances naturally create a whole lot of inner disturbance. It's easy for the mind to fall into a spiral of terrifying imaginings, sending the body in distress as the heart slams shut in protection, and we're abducted into a defensive and self-preserving posture, which sadly just adds to the divisiveness and fearful othering. So what are we to do? How do we manage our painful emotions so we can find our wisdom and help be helpful to each other and our world? How do we fully acknowledge the suffering, but at the same time not let it define or overwhelm us? How do we keep our hearts open so we can remember to love everyone? As I ponder this, it seems to me that first of all, we need to remember our basic goodness and our interconnectedness. Secondly, we need to truly accept that this is our current reality and work skillfully with all the feelings this provokes. And we need to bring compassion to ourselves and each other so we can find our stability and our wise, open heart. So let's start with recalling the basic view of this path. Because our minds are shaped and conditioned as we grow up, we all innocently develop incorrect and biased views of ourself, each other, and reality. And these distorted views create our suffering. And we like it when things go how we want them to go. Others agree with us, our relationships are working, the people we love are doing well, we have a job we like, the sun is shining, our body's comfortable. We don't like it when things don't go our way. Others aren't being how we want them to be. We hate or lose our job. Our body is ailing. The weather is bad. When we don't like what's happening, we tend to resist our experience by striking out against ourselves or something or someone else. And until we realize we're caught in our reactive habits, we're stuck in them, being pulled this way and that way, acting out of them, feeling separate, and causing misery to ourselves and each other. Yet always beyond the conditioned mind, unaffected by these biases and habits, is our true nature, our natural consciousness, our awakened mind, our basic goodness and intelligence. And just like the blue sky, which is unaffected by the weather patterns on the surface of the planet, our true nature is always here, spacious, stable, open, loving, generous, wise, and compassionate. Another metaphor I love for our true nature, our basic goodness, is the story of the giant clay Buddha in Thailand. This clay Buddha was tended for hundreds of years by devout monks who would diligently repair cracks in the clay as it dried out in the hot Thai sun. Then one day, while repairing an especially large crack, a monk caught a glimpse of something shiny underneath. Curious, he pulled out the broken clay to examine it more closely, and to his great surprise discovered there was gold beneath it. Calling to his fellow monks to help him remove the rest of the clay, the now famous Golden Buddha was fully revealed. We can think of the habits of our conditioning as the clay that covers our inner gold, our inherent light, our basic goodness and wisdom. It's always here, untarnished and shining. From this ultimate view of reality, we also need to remember another truth, that we're not separate, but instead all one, all connected, all with the same potential, and all in the same boat. Perhaps you've heard Einstein's conclusion based on his understanding of physics. Einstein said, "A human being is a part of the whole, called by us the universe, a part limited in time and space. We experience ourself, our thoughts and feelings as something separated from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of our consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and to affection for a few persons nearest to us. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty." So waking up to this optical delusion of our consciousness, remembering we're all interconnected, we see that we're affecting each other all the time. So when we realize we're caught in our conditioning and causing harm to ourselves or another, we could choose to be generous and forgiving, understanding we're all works in progress and doing the best we can in any given moment. It's vital to remember this fundamental view of our basic goodness and interconnection. Otherwise, we're destined to be lost and feeling separate, believing our biased views, lost in painful othering, and will add to the divisive and incorrect view of me against you, us against them. Then we must acknowledge and accept our present moment reality on all dimensions of our lives, from accepting how things are globally, including the climate crisis, accepting the tremendous turmoil and inequality in our own country, and accepting all the ways that we're affected by this individually as we live with ourselves moment by moment. This means practicing radical acceptance of what is. As Sharon Salzberg reminds us in her latest book, Real Change, Mindfulness to Heal Ourselves and the World, some things just hurt. Some things just hurt. This is the profound teaching the Buddha pointed out, that suffering is a fact of life. Despite our well-honed habits of denying, avoiding, suppressing, projecting, and distracting ourselves from what's painful, we need to turn towards the truth of our experience in order to find our way through it. We have to be honest about what we're experiencing. Otherwise, we're locked into a distorted reality. This means letting ourselves accept and feel all that we feel. A couple of weeks ago, on a morning walk with our dog Gracie and my wife said in a voice that felt accusatory, "You're so anxious." I snapped back something like, "Well, I have a lot to work on and I'm worried about not having enough time." I felt judged, and we walked in silence for a while as I stewed with the sharpness of our interaction. Then raising my voice defensively, I said, "I need the space to feel whatever I feel. I don't like it when you tell me not to be how I am." She responded by insisting that she wasn't saying that at all. But as we walked on in silence again, I continued to feel crimped by her charge. As I mused on all of this, I encouraged myself to give this all more space, feel my feet contacting the earth, and take in the blue sky and the early morning sun. Suddenly, I realized that under the anxiety was a whole boatload of anger and pain. So I said, "You know what? I'm really just so mad, so pissed, so angry that everything seems to be falling apart. Every day there's worse news, more destruction, more fear-mongering, more craziness and stupidity, more people getting sick and dying. I'm afraid our democracy is crumbling. It all feels so out of control, and I feel so mad and so sad about it all." The effect of naming this, accepting my truth of the moment, was that it cleared away the numbness of the anxiety, and I felt authentically connected to myself again. Now I could give these painful feelings room to be without judging them or resisting them or denying them. And with this acceptance, the feelings shifted and changed as we walked along. By the time we reached our house, I felt stable, open, and a lot calmer and lighter. So some things just hurt. There is pain in life. Of course, we know that's not the whole picture. There are so many wonderful things in life too. 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows, as the wise ones remind us. Yet as I've heard Pema Chodron say so many times, as human beings, we should never underestimate our preference for the pleasant. We don't like the unpleasant. We don't want to experience the painful. And we try to fool ourselves with a lot of maneuvers to avoid our uncomfortable reality. But we know that resistance just keeps us on the run, disconnected from ourselves, and more likely to feel overwhelmed, anxious, depressed, and acting out of those habits, those neural grooves we all have. Perhaps because of our resistance to pain and the clarity of realizing that suffering, pain, and loss are integral to being alive, the Buddha was kind enough to offer the teachings of the five remembrances. He encouraged us to remind ourselves of these daily. Do you remember them? Number one is, I am of the nature to grow old. There is no way to escape growing old. The body ages. Number two, I am of the nature to have ill health. There is no way to escape having ill health. The body will get sick. Number three, I am of the nature to die. There is no way to escape death. Life is ultimately a death sentence. And number four, all that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. So I will lose all that I'm attached to. And number five, my actions are my only true belongings. I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. They are the ground on which I stand. What I do and don't do is my legacy. Though this dose of pure reality may seem harsh, it's so true because this is the nature of life. Nature is continuously in the process of change, impermanence. We know this intellectually, at least. And everything on this earthly plane is nature. We are nature. But it's darn hard to accept this when it's my loved one that's dying of COVID, or it's my job that's been cut, or it's my country and our democracy that's being crippled and harmed by a dangerous ruler. But we could also see this clearer view of how things are as liberating, because we don't have to pretend it's otherwise anymore. Since it's natural that we all experience pain, we can learn to open to it, accept it, stay steady with ourselves as we feel it, and then witness how it too changes, since pain, like everything else, is impermanent. In these days, I'd say it's darn normal to be feeling all kinds of painful emotions, anxiety and fear, anger, irritation, impatience, despair, grief, disappointment, loneliness and sadness, to name a few. However, the common cultural view toward pain and suffering promoted in patriarchy is that emotions, especially painful ones, are irrational and we're weak, childish, and wrong for feeling them. We're taught to hide our uncomfortable feelings, strive to keep ourselves in control, act like we're okay, be pleasing, and of course, be good. We're urged to look on the bright side, get busy and distract ourselves, or stuff those feelings down, take a pill, have a drink, eat or buy something, but don't feel it or express it. But as long as we follow these dysfunctional cultural dictates, we simply prolong and deepen our suffering, as well as our disconnection from ourselves and each other. Instead, we know accepting whatever we're feeling is the only sane path to health and freedom. But to be clear, accepting the distress we're feeling right now about the pandemic, the precarious state of our country, fear about the uncertain future, or any pain or torment we're experiencing isn't easy, and it doesn't mean we like it or agree with it. Just the other day when I heard a state government person say it might not be until 2022 that we really can get back to normal, as in working together side by side, I realized that I'm still not totally accepting the reality of this pandemic. There is still a way I'm kind of holding my breath, resisting this, and waiting for it to be over. Yet in fully accepting reality, the external conditions and our internal reactions, we understand that if we want to become fully awakened and free, we have to learn to not shy away from or reject any unpleasant experience we're having. It's like accepting the weather. We may prefer sunny days to gray or summer to winter, but especially if we live in the Midwest, we're wise to accept all four seasons and whatever the weather is right now. So what we're doing here by opening to and accepting our painful feelings mindfully is so wise and so brave. The understanding that loss and pain are natural in life and knowing how to relate to those feelings skillfully, not the norm. But it's liberating and crucial right now. Instead of trying to fool ourselves with platitudes to sweeten the pain, we can accept and view our present suffering, as well as the wounds from our past. Like Zen teacher Roshi Joan Halifax suggests, we can accept them as givens, not gifts. When we accept something as a given, we don't try to talk ourselves out of it or deny it. We acknowledge it and then guide ourselves into being with it skillfully. In order to sustain our attention with the discomfort so we can find our stability and wisdom with it, we need to offer compassion to ourselves. I once heard His Holiness the Dalai Lama say, "It is only the radical mindset of compassion that can truly transform suffering and create peace within ourselves, each other, and the planet." It is only the radical mindset of compassion that can truly transform suffering and create peace within ourselves, each other, and the planet. And when asked how we should respond at a time when our country was escalating tensions in the Middle East, Pema Chodron said, "Compassion is our only hope." She also reported on a surprising account of a group of Tibetan monks and nuns who had been imprisoned and tortured by their Chinese captors for years. Upon their release from prison, astonishingly, none of them displayed any signs of post-traumatic stress disorder from their years of torture. When asked what made that possible, they said they'd been practicing compassion the whole time. So what is it about compassion that makes it so potent and essential? Compassion is part of our true nature, our basic goodness, our open, loving heart. It's that soft, tender spot that we all have that naturally arises when we understand the universal truth of suffering. That when conditions are right, we all experience pain and misery. And we all know compassion. It's that feeling of heartfelt sympathy and sorrow when we truly open to the pain we're feeling. It's being able to sincerely say to ourselves, "I'm so sorry this is being so painful right now." It's the sincere wish for all beings to be happy and free from suffering, along with the desire to do whatever we can to alleviate that suffering. When we recognize someone else's pain, it's being able to say, "I'm so sorry this is so painful for you right now. May you find ease with this." Recent science has revealed that when we feel compassion, remarkably, the pleasure centers in the brain light up, not the pain centers. It seems that compassion brings courage and fearlessness to bearing our pain and distress. It keeps our heart open to what we're feeling, enabling us to stay steady and spacious with it rather than shutting down or being consumed by it. It creates the inner conditions whereby our wisdom has the space it needs to naturally emerge through the obscuring clouds of our conditioning. Here's how we can apply this when we're pulled into a painful emotion. As soon as you realize you're upset, say you're in the grip of fear about getting COVID, or you feel the heaviness of grief for all that's been lost, or the fire of anger bursts up as you see the shopping mall parking lot filled with cars and you know those shoppers aren't social distancing, you turn right towards this and acknowledge it. You might say, ah, here's fear, or here's grief, or here's feeling lots of anger. By naming your experience without inserting that personal pronoun, I'm afraid, or I'm sad, or I'm angry, you're shifting your perspective from being the feeling, being caught up in it, to observing that this is what's predominant right now. Instead of being the storm, you are now witnessing the storm. Disidentifying this way creates the inner breathing room, which helps you accept it and remember that, yes, this is a moment of suffering. And yes, suffering is a part of being alive. Everyone experiences these feelings at times. This is unpleasant, yes, but normal and human. Next, move closer to the feeling and ask, well, how am I actually experiencing this right now? Invite yourself to get really curious about your exact experience. What's the story here? What was I just imagining or remembering or telling myself? Even though we're often not aware of it, there's always a dramatic story behind the emotion we're feeling. And it's really helpful if we can spot it. It's also helpful to remember the mind's stories aren't always true or real or accurate, but they are powerful, and it really helps to recognize the story clearly. Then shift your attention under the storyline to the sensation it's creating in your body. So you might ask, well, where am I feeling this right now in my body? And then bring all of your attention to that knot in your belly, or heaviness in your chest, or tightness in your throat or jaw. The felt sense of this, wherever this is in your body. And then investigate this feeling, this sensation, this felt sense, with tons of curiosity. And let it be just the way it is. We're not trying to change it or fix it or make it go away. Instead, you're just accepting it and relaxing around it, giving it space, letting it be. And now as you companion this painful feeling, this painful sensation, offer compassion to yourself as sincerely as you can. I'm so sorry this is so painful right now. I'm so sorry this hurts so much. I'm so sorry this is so hard to bear. May I have ease with this. This helps your heart open and helps you stay steady. And as you're cradling the feeling in your awareness, noticing what it's like, it may intensify, it may stay the same, or it may lessen. But as you offer sympathy and sustain your attention, you're creating the inner conditions whereby the wisdom of your true nature has room to shine through. An insight might arise about what this is really about for you, or what you really need right now. Or you might directly ask yourself, well, given this, what's a wise and kind way to respond to myself? And then simply open to whatever occurs to you. As you continue to relate to your experience in this way, at a certain point, you'll likely realize impermanence has had its way, and this difficult emotion has dissipated, and you're resting free in your blue sky mind again. But besides being validating and comforting, compassion has a fierce aspect to it as well. It can be wisely protective, like a mother bear instinctively protects her cubs when she realizes they're being threatened, out of love, wisdom, and seeing reality clearly. We can firmly say no to an action that is harmful. We can express clear and wise boundaries that prevent or stop suffering from happening. Sharon Salzberg tells a story about this in her early days in India learning about Buddhism. Perhaps you know this story. She was traveling with a friend through Calcutta on their way to the train station to get to their next teacher. The rickshaw driver they hired decided to take them through a back alley as a shortcut to the station. And as they went through that alley, a man stopped them and tried to pull Sharon out of the rickshaw, and she feared that he would rape her. Fortunately, her friend managed to pull her back in and she escaped unharmed. But being very upset about this, and a new student, Sharon was especially concerned with what would have been the correct Buddhist response to this incident. So when they arrived at their next teacher, she explained what had happened and asked what she should have done. Her teacher listened carefully and then said, "Well, my dear, with all the love in your heart, you should have taken out your umbrella and hit that man over his head as hard as you could." This was clear instruction in fierce compassion. Not only would this have stopped the man from hurting Sharon, which was self-protective, it was also protective of him. By stopping him from hurting her, she would have prevented him from committing a harmful act that would ultimately have hurt him. Hitting him with her umbrella with love in her heart would have been saying, "No, you may not harm me." This would have been an act of loving kindness for both Sharon and the attacker. Clearly, the challenging part of fierce compassion is to offer with love in our heart instead of hatred. Given patriarchy has trained many of us to not rock the boat, to comply and silence ourselves instead of speaking up in protest when we're harmed, dismissed, or denigrated, we need to understand that anger and resolve are a part of fierce compassion. Acquiescing to mistreatment is not wise, kind, or compassionate. We not only hurt ourselves, but we inadvertently contribute to the other's suffering as well. When someone behaves in a way that's hurtful to ourselves or to someone else, or expresses a view that we believe is harmful, out of compassion, fierce compassion, we need to pull out our umbrella and with love in our heart say no firmly. We've been witnessing fierce compassion in the nationwide and worldwide protests against racism, social justice, and police brutality. We can be fiercely compassionate when a friend behaves in a way that we know will create more miseries for her by lovingly calling her on it. We can be fiercely compassionate with ourselves when we say no to a behavior that we know will cause us more suffering. Like when we start diving in to eat that whole bag of Oreo cookies instead of just two. Out of love for ourselves and the understanding that eating the whole bag will trigger a bout of self-hatred, we can say to ourselves, "Honey, two is enough right now." Or when we spot our mind spinning terrifying what-if stories about our democracy crumbling or the pandemic going out of forever. Out of compassion for ourselves, we can firmly shift attention away from the story back to what's really happening in this moment. The tricky part in fierce compassion is making sure we keep our hearts open in love instead of slam shut in hatred to the one causing harm, be it ourselves or others. Understanding the reality of our interconnectedness and interdependence, that we affect each other and depend on each other, is also a key aspect of compassion. The extreme contagiousness of the virus validates this reality. We're all vulnerable to it. Perhaps it's never been so obvious that we're all in the same boat. And right now there's a lot of COVID-19 on board. Yet the political polarization and sense of us versus them these days is dangerously extreme. It's easier, of course, to feel compassion for the suffering that we and our friends are going through. But for those that we put in the them or other category who ignore public health guidelines, refuse to wear masks or socially distance, go to bars and public gatherings, and voted for someone who spewed chaos and destruction, it's much more difficult. It's easy to see them as the enemy and fall into anger and fear, thinking, "What's the matter with you? Don't you understand this virus is highly contagious and your refusal to wear a mask may kill someone, possibly your brother or your grandmother or me?" We judge them as wrong, hateful, ignorant, selfish, and not like me, not like us. We slam our hearts shut and forget to remember they're reacting out of their conditioning, and they're caught up in fear, anger, and loss too. Though their view of what's happening may not be the same, and their fears may be different than mine or yours, still, fear is fear. Grief is grief. Anger is anger. And they're all painful. Though we need to be physically separate to dial down the spread of COVID, we still need human connection with each other. And if we hope to heal the divisions and come together, we need to respect our interconnectedness. If we can remember that no matter how different those others may seem, we all want the same basic thing, to be safe, healthy, loved, happy, and free from misery. Perhaps by remembering this, we can feel compassion for those whose views and behaviors seem so opposed to ours, and that just like us, they're suffering too. There's a great practice that Pema Chodron suggests for dialing down polarization and remembering we're all connected called Just Like Me. It works like this. When you're out in your community, perhaps you're at the grocery store or walking in your neighborhood, or maybe you're caught in a traffic jam, select one person you see and say something like this to yourself. Just like me, this person wants to feel secure and safe. Just like me, this person feels uncomfortable at times. Just like me, this person loses it sometimes. Just like me, this person wants to feel loved and happy. Through practicing this and keeping our hearts compassionately open, instead of slammed shut in fear and hatred, we will be able to respond to them more wisely. We might be able to say to someone who we put in the "what's the matter with you people" category, "I'm so sorry you've lost your job. I'm so sorry you're afraid and stressed out too." And when someone not wearing a mask suddenly zooms too close and we feel unsafe, out of fierce compassion and love for ourselves and the other, we could find our courage and say something like, "With respect and concern for both of us, please put on your mask. Please help all of us by socially distancing. And thank you so much." As we live through these dark and uncertain times, we don't know what the future will be. But given we're all connected and sailing in this boat of human consciousness together, it's clear that every single one of us matters. Today I've spoken of the need to remember our basic goodness and interconnection, of the need to turn mindfully to our difficult emotions by accepting them fully, and the importance of offering compassion for the pain we feel so our hearts stay open and we can find our wisdom and skillful response. And I've spoken of the need to offer compassion to those who seem so different from us, remembering our interdependence so we can live in love and connection rather than in alienation. It's vital to remember that whenever we realize we're feeling distressed, we always have a choice in how we respond. We can react in our old familiar ways, resisting and remaining caught, or we can choose the path of wisdom and liberation. Which choice we make will affect not only ourselves, but it will ripple out to others, affecting all of our futures. Let's make the choice to live in love and in our open, compassionate, wise hearts. Let's sit for a few minutes. And now I'll be shifting, taking a few minutes to transition to walking meditation. or obsessively guiding mindful movement, sitting in a chair,